It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
William.
Yes.
It's time for everybody's favorite segment.
Oh no.
Alex brought some cookies to the all you can eat eating the menu time. That there is a joke just for you Try Guys and or Lou Burger fans. That's not the joke. That's not everybody's favorite segment. That's not your favorite segment. Your favorite segment is when we find out what grinds my gears.
Oh, yeah. What grinds your gears?
And I got one again.
It's not my favorite segment, but it did come up
the other day and reminded me. So I want to talk about this. You might relate. This one might work for you, too. I don't know.
It might grind your gears. Wow.
And I also, here's a very interesting thing. I do not technically know if it ever happens in real life, but it happens in TV and movies all the dang time.
It grinds your gears that it happens in TV and movies, or it would grind your gears if it happened in real life?
It would grind my gears if it happened in real life. I only ever witness it in TV and movies, and it grinds my gears when I witness it.
Okay.
Like patently impossible promises. They happen constantly.
Like promise me you'll be okay. Yeah, I promise.
Or promise I'll get there safe. I promise I'm gonna fix this.
Yeah.
I promise you we are going to get out alive. I promise you this will be fine. And I'm just like, you, not only do I know you're in a movie, so I know that's probably not true, like it would be impossible for you to know. How would you, especially the ones where like, I promise I'm going to fix this, or I promise you'll be fine. And I'm like, you still don't have a handle on what has happened or what is happening. Like, that is the wildest shit to say. That is like, I promise you I am going to develop self propelled flight. Like, that's how, like, it's not, how would you know? I hate it. And it shows up in assuming for a moment that real people don't particularly do this, it is a really deeply embedded story trope in TV and movies at this point. And movies that are real good otherwise.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like they do it just to create the tension of, oh no, this person's made a promise. Now there's going to be, you know, now that's going to be a part of the drama.
Fucking throwaway. It's usually code switching essentially for, I promise you that I'm going to try my best to create the results we're hoping for without having any way of knowing for sure if I can do it. I promise to try.
But there is an angle of, you know, later on when you're seeing this person nearly fail at this or fail at this, you'll remember they made this promise, and that's supposed to increase the drama of the moment, you know, wondering whether or not they'll succeed or understanding now how crushed they feel at failure. You know, it definitely fills that role.
It didn't used to be there, though, because all they did was cut off half of it. The end of that sentence is, or die trying. And in a lot of these, that's what it comes down to. I have, for all that I have a very weird and arbitrary relationship with honesty. I lie a lot, and yet certain things really make me mad if you lie about them. And promises are a big one. I essentially never make promises because I'm like, I don't know. And Promise says, it, Promise to me is I guarantee. And unless it's like, I guarantee I'll try my hardest, I'm like, you can't guarantee. You're not, you don't have that supernatural capability.
There does seem to also, though, be a aspect of it where I think it's getting more popular in our culture these days, this notion of compassionate lying, telling a person something you think will make them feel better,
yeah,
and that there's something white, noble white about lies. That.
It, well, and, more than and, that. And I understand the premise of that in situations where the problem is it doesn't work here. It's not like other people think you have the power to guarantee it. If we're in the haunted house with the murderer or whatever, and you say to me, I promise you we're going to get out of here, I already know you can't promise that. It's not like, oh, really? Awesome.
I know, but the cool. context.
I thought the odds were really against us, but apparently you've got it on lock.
Yeah, yeah, but the context is often they're talking to a child and maybe the child will have hope for a little while longer, or they're talking to a group of people that, yes, even though you're right, they surely know that this is not true, that somehow that'll let them hang on to hope, and hope is a good thing for them to hang on to even for a little while. I don't know.
In my experience, they're almost always talking to their girlfriend or the woman they want to be their girlfriend. But also, even then, you just don't use the word promise. I see when with the kid version, I see a lot more. It's like, no, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. And that to me is a compassionate lie. But when you say, I promise, I'm like, my, and also, I promise I'll fix this. I don't want to say 100% of the time. 99.9999999% of the time, they're talking about fixing something they screwed up, and they have a proven track record of being unable to fix such things. And by the end, they don't fix it.
Of course, in that case, there is a sort of a class of people in the real world who do that, right? Who are constantly screwing up, but also constantly promising they won't next time, or they'll fix this or that. I mean, that there are people like that, unfortunately.
Yes. And I get that as a vibe, but well, I just really watched something recently where the protagonist did it. And I'm like, you didn't have to do that. You could just say, I'm going to do what I can. I even I have a plan. Could be fine, but I promise this will work. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's lazy writing in some sort, you know, that the person writing, I mean, is just being lazy?
That becomes the question with a lot of tropes. And I do feel like this has reached a trope point. Is it lazy because you've got it to hand already and you're like, these other people used it and nobody complained about them because Tony and William's podcast only has like 6 listeners, so the message didn't get out. So must be fine. What I want to know, like I said, I don't think I've encountered this in real life, but I don't frequently encounter the kind of extreme situations like this. I want to know if life has begun to imitate art in that sense. Because if people in my life started promising things that by definition they would be unable to promise, I would be pissed off.
I mean, you're right. I don't like when this happens in movies or TV.
Does it do something to your gears? I don't want to prejudice you anything in particular to your gears. No,
I don't think it does anything to my gears.
All right. You know what it does to my gears?
I think it grinds them.
It does, in fact.
There's little metal shavings underneath your gears when that happens.
Yes. Yes, it sucks all the lubrication out of my gears. Yeah. It did not sound nearly as gross in my head, in my defense. I promise you, I didn't think it sounded that bad when I was thinking about it.
You promise, huh? I hear some gears grinding when you say that.
No, gears grinding are if I said, I promise you, William, it's not as gross as you think it is.
I didn't really think about it being gross.
It sounds gross to me. It's an ambiguous gross. Like, I can't tell you specifically what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I get that part. Yeah.
Sucking the lubrication out of my gears sounds unwholesome.
It's grinding my gears that you're making me think about it so much.
Mm.
So I wish you'd stop.
Everyone, welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that moves faster than sound, which means two things. One, if you listen just right, you'll hear the sonic boom if you're close enough. And also, generally speaking, you will see our podcast before you hear it, because light travels faster than, you know, so. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 596. If you count the seconds between when you see the podcast and hear the podcast,
you can see how far the podcast.
Yeah, you can guess calculate how far away we are.
Yeah. Similarly, if you stand at the base of the podcast and then step away unknown distance and look at it and can determine the angle at which you're looking, you can determine how tall the podcast is.
These are fantastic tips we're giving people today.
Did you ever get science toys as a kid?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. I got that one specifically. I forget what it's called, but it's got a measure. And so you look through the thing at the top of something and it will give you the angle.
Yeah, we got one of those when we bought, the kids were young. We did rocketry and you could get a kit. And it didn't just have a couple rockets and launch system and all that stuff. It had tools you could use to, you know, judge the height, and, you know, you could calculate the height and the speed and the thrust and all kinds of things with the tools that they gave you. So I tried to teach the kids those, as well as just building rockets and firing them off. I tried to teach them how to use that stuff.
Are you very quickly passing through various planes of existence, some of which are light and some of which are dark?
No, I'm adjacent to someone who's doing that just outside my window.
All right. Because, like, yeah.
I'm not doing it.
The lighting is shifting a great deal. And I associate that with, like, a cloud passing over the sun. But based on the experience, there is a whole line of comparatively small clouds just traveling in a straight line.
I think I have it set up for the light, for the application or computer or something to adjust. It doesn't know what
it's not
do.
The input, it's the output that's changing.
I guess it can't figure out, because I have a light on, you know, but I also have natural light coming in through the window. Maybe it can't.
Do you think we need ring lights? Is that what's stopping us from the big time? Is we don't have ring lights?
I mean, I only
learned what ring lights were when COVID happened and we all started working from home. And one of my coworkers was vain enough that she didn't think she looked good and she bought a ring light. And I'm like, what is that? And that's when I found out. And since then, I found out that all good YouTubers and such have them.
Oh, yeah, for years.
Why are they ring-shaped? What does that do?
Okay, so the first time I realized that people were using ring lights was almost as soon as it happened, because I was watching YouTube videos and people who wore glasses and things would not pay attention to their reflection. You know, so it's like immediately... Like
their eyes on top of their eyes.
Immediately, I realized there was this new thing that YouTubers were using to light their whatever. And the reason
you're always really at the forefront of YouTube trends, though, so that's not surprising.
And the reason they're so you know that lighting is actually complicated to do. So what?
I mean, it's just complicated enough that I've never paid any attention.
I mean, if you want to do it right, it's kind of complicated. So. The first time I realized that ring lights were a thing, I also could kind of figure out why they were popular, because the reason they're rings is because one of the things that makes lighting complicated is you well, like with this, you know, you've got light coming in one direction. There's a lot of shadow on this side of my face. I mean, if I was doing lighting correctly, first of all, I wouldn't use natural light at all, probably. I also probably wouldn't have this thing adjusting itself. And I might have a couple light sources. I'd also maybe take a light source off of a, you've seen those white umbrellas that sometimes they have.
Yeah.
That's to scatter the light so that it doesn't create harsh shadows and all that.
That
stuff.
Part I understand. Then reflectors, I understand that.
Well, the ring prevents the light from being like a direct light source onto their face. It kind of does the same thing as shining a light on that umbrella. It makes it seem more scattered.
It inherently diffuses it just by its shape.
So, and when you put it in the right place in the YouTube video situation, it seems to light the person's face and just the front of them evenly. Which is what most YouTubers want. They don't care how the background's lit. They don't care if being fully lit like that in a matte way kind of washes them out sometimes. They don't care about any of that. They just want the lighting to be good enough and to not have a bunch of harsh shadows on their face. And actually, usually that does work just fine. I mean, a lot of the YouTube videos, some of them don't look great, but a lot of them, that ring light thing does a pretty good job.
Yeah, no, they seem very effective. I don't question the ability. I just question how. But yeah, no, that all makes sense.
And like when they wear glasses, that's a problem.
Yeah.
They shouldn't do that.
I notoriously show up for Zoom meetings early. And so I frequently get everything set up and then I watch TV. And the TV is quite big and it's just over there. So sometimes I'm like, oh shit, this lighting is terrible. And then I'm like, oh no. It's because the TV is glaring at me. And as soon as I turn off the TV, it's gone. And it'll like reflect off my sun, off of my glasses and things.
I mean, you look great all the time. Regular
light.
That's
just genetics. I mean, that's, I glow from within.
You're just using light in the room, right? I mean, you're not really.
Yeah. This is normal. I am not near any open. No natural light is shining on me.
Maybe that's a bad idea. Maybe I should just close that.
There's no changes because no natural light is shining on me. I got that.
Oh well, see, that makes a difference.
Yeah, I kind of like that. That's the one we decided on. But like the back door is here, and I have just a giant. I wouldn't call it a blackout curtain, but a very thick curtain. So yeah, it's just that and a lamp there. And then the very back, you can see some natural light. But that's
actually with some YouTubers, you can see the ring light in their eyes. It kind of has that effect of Cate Blanchett in Lord of the Rings. I don't know if you remember, but with her, when they lit her, they put like lots of individual lights at a distance from her and in a place where her eyes did look like there were a whole bunch of lights in them. They wanted that effect for that character. And sometimes YouTubers look like,
Say remember as though I worked on the set. How would I possibly have known that before to remember?
I forget that other people don't watch the making of stuff like I do. I'd rather watch 10 hours of making of the Lord of the Rings then watch the Lord of the Rings. So interesting.
I mean,
that's probably
if you make that people. The Hobbit, I might be there for you. I don't know. I still have never seen any of the Hobbit. So those of you just joining us, it's not going to get better. We have a hat that is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Occasionally, could be more, would love it. People write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with lots of things that they want us to talk about. And the hat makes us talk about them. And that's what we do. So there you go. So what you been up to?
Did you watch the rest of Sandman?
I did watch the rest of Sandman. In fact, we finished it last night.
Do you want to talk about it? What do you want to say about it? Anything?
It's tricky. I'm going to maintain my belief that the show is good. I would recommend it to basically anyone who enjoys fantasy and doesn't have a problem with horror elements. It does get horrific in places. Not super bad, but there's stuff. And I do think it is, for me at least, the best you could do at in 2022 adapting the 1980s comics to television.
80s?
Yeah, it was late. Well, late 80s was when it started. That's, I'll tell you a funny story about an adjustment they made because of changes in the years, because they upgraded some things because the present was going to be now instead of the late 80s, but they left some things the same. So then the numbers had to get it. I'll explain off air because I don't want to spoil anything, but it's amusing to me. They really, as I predicted, as it went on, the changes became bigger and bigger. Also, I did misspeak. This season covers the first two volumes of Sandman. And either, because they did sort of a little stinger at the end for what might happen next, either I am misremembering things in certain ways, or they're going in a completely different direction, which I don't think so, because despite all the changes, the general plot has stayed the same. They go way off base, but then they come back for like this point and all that. Or they're skipping ahead. The end of the season seemed to hint at what I think is the fourth volume of Sandman, and that would mean they're just skipping the third volume. Maybe I'm misremembering, but we'll have to see. After the first volume was done, which episode 6 is the end of the first volume, and then the last four are volume 2. I did not enjoy it as much personally, but I also don't enjoy volume 2 of Sandman, the comics, very much. It is not one of my favorite arcs. So it is hard to say. But yeah, and then they really started changing things around. They killed off characters that didn't exist. They took two characters, removed them, replaced them with an entirely different character, and not only did that character go through essentially the arc that those two characters did, it later got a different additional arc that just came out of nowhere. Like, they really made some changes. But again, all the important beats were hit, although I was very confused, and I'm going to dance around this carefully. There is a character that they made a very deliberate point of not naming. And this is not a new character. This is a very specific character that is in the comics and that fucking has a name. So I don't know why they did it. It is, but like, it is deliberately talked about not giving this character a name.
I don't remember that.
And I was like, I yelled at the screen. I was like, why are you doing that? Their name is, I know what their name is. I'll explain to you afterwards. I suppose it's easy to miss if you're not thinking in those terms, but I, of course, never stop. In fact, this kind of got me the urge to read the comics again. And I don't think it is at all because I want to experience the comics. I want to be more sure about what's different and what's not. I don't know why. But no, I thought it was good. It's incredibly well produced. It's incredibly well cast. A surprising number of British comedians got cast in roles, small and large. There's actually one in particular. She's an American comedian, but she lives in the UK, by the name of Desiree Birch, who was put in for two scenes in an insignificant role that I don't know why she was there, but I love her to death. So I was so happy for her, but I was like, holy shit, what's she doing there? Thanks to a few people, but you've been a big reason for this. I now have a better sense of sometimes things get changed because it works better on screen than it does in books, or by definition, we can't put the same amount of detail and this is an easier way to arc things.
Sure.
some things are done a lot of that.
Some things are done because it's a book. I mean, you don't really think about that, but some things are done because it's a comic book or because it's a novel that now you don't need to do in a visual medium.
And there are also things that I'm like, it's a time issue in two forms. One is there was some dark and disturbing shit in Sandman, and there's some dark and disturbing shit in this version as well. But some of the dark and disturbing shit from then is not so in fashion now, is the best way I can put it. So we changed it a little bit. And like, I think the goal of this TV show is not the same as the goal of the comic book. And so there's also places where I'm like, we didn't make it as freaky, or we made it nicer. There are places where I'm like, this is too comfortable, too almost precious of a plot arc that we clearly did because it feels nice in a TV show. And in the comics, it was a little rougher. Like, we had to answer more things, or in some cases leave out things, because I'm like, in a TV show, it wouldn't feel that way. What's fun, and what I really started learning at the very end. So they make a change. This could apply to anything, but they make a change, and that change has ramifications. So we left this character out because this character is not very big, and so the arcs are different. But also, because we left this character out, then this can't happen unless we put a different character in there. And that means that this, and then things and things and things. And in my head, I kept thinking of it linearly. So like, they made the decision to do the first thing and then they had to adjust. But I realized later, anything in that whole chain reaction could have been the thing they decided to change, and then had to retroactively change other stuff. And I had one in particular where I'm like, this means, and it basically switched where a certain character was in a certain part of the story. And I'm like, I think they did that because it is more palatable this way than it was in the comics. And again, especially in this day and age, that would have been weird and stuff like that. But then that means, so all the other shit that I've been pondering for 4 or 5 episodes was just what they had to do so this part was right, assuming I'm right this time, and I might not be.
Right.
So that became almost kind of entertaining for me. Like, why did they change that? Oh, is it because they changed this and then they had to, or is it which came first and all that? And that was kind of fun. I definitely hope it gets more seasons.
I do too.
I think it's being very well received, so I imagine it would. I also would imagine that it's pretty expensive to make. It looks amazing. So we'll have to see. But yeah, I was pretty pleased with that. We haven't really watched anything else much lately. I've been watching some real, real bad movies that I've been having fun with. Old ones. Old horror movies. I watched Beyond the Door 3, which don't worry about 1 and 2. There was a phase in the 70s and 80s, I think mostly in Italy, but in general in Europe, where they would just take a movie and be like, oh yeah, it's a sequel to this other one because that other one made money, and like it has nothing to do with it. And in sometimes it just switched. There was a series in Europe called La Casa, the house, and they just stuck movies in there, and there's like movies that it's totally different, but they're like, yeah, no, over in Italy it was La Casa 5 or whatever. for no reason. And so I think this is one of those, because there's no like overarching story. But it was one of those where like everything that happened contradicted what happened before it. And it's, I mean, the short version is, it's an Antichrist story. This young woman, and she's got a birthmark on her that looks like devil horns. And it turns out that basically she's Satan's bride over in Yugoslavia, and her school, her class takes a trip over there so that she can marry Satan, and hijinks ensue. But what's interesting is most of the story takes place on a possessed train. So girl's got the freaky birthmark. We early on, we saw scary cultists and whatever. And then the class is going over there and they meet professor, and that professor's evil. And he's taking them to this little village where shit's going to go down. You can tell because all the other classmates, they try and kill him in fires and everything. And everybody runs away and all this. And they all jump on a train except two of them. And it's been like 15 or 20 minutes of the movie. And then the vast bulk of the movie is they're on this train and they can't get it to stop, and all the other people die and all this stuff. And it like passes through. So we end up with this B plot that is the Serbian railway company trying to deal with a runaway train. And none of it is subtitled. So we have entire scenes that are, I believe, some sort of railway central hub with lots of monitors and stuff, full of Serbians speaking Serbian. And I don't know what they say, but like reoccurring characters. Like there were several scenes, like I remember these people that showed up, and they were always in this room, and they'd make a phone call, and then they'd say something, and then they'd point to a screen where lights were. None of it has anything. And then they'd try something and it wouldn't work because the train's possessed by the devil. But like, we spent time on this, and I don't know. I mean, I know they were talking about the train, but they'd like get a phone call and be like, and then they'd put it down and they'd say something, and everybody else is like, dun dun dun, kind of look. But I'm like, I have no idea what any of this was. And then we'd go to the actual stations and they had people trying to do things with the track and yelling at each other. And I don't know what it was. It was really weird. And yeah, none of it made sense. Every time they spoke. Well, okay. I didn't mean to talk about this, but here's how I can explain this. Based on statements that were made within this film, every year, thousands of pilgrims show up to this small village to witness a ritual that only takes place every 100 years and only happens once in 1,000 years.
I don't understand. So
exactly.
Now, okay. Going every year, I get how that doesn't make any sense. But going every 100 years to see something that happens every 1,000 years? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Every year people show up for this thing that happens every 100 years, but only happens every 1,000 years.
But and that
they
means...
don't say it. They don't say it that way. Here's what happens.
Oh.
Initially, they're going to Yugoslavia they are so privileged to be able to witness this ritual that only happens every 100 years.
Oh, okay.
And then later they are told by the local professor that every year thousands of pilgrims flock to this village, which, by the way, when it happens, no pilgrims, just the villagers, but whatever. Every year, thousands of pilgrims flock to this. And then later, when we find out it's all a marrying Satan thing, we find out it only happens every 1,000 years. That's how little, that's just the tip of the making no sense iceberg. It was impressive. And I watched the old Vincent Price one. The Haunted Palace, which is based on an Edgar Allan Poe poem and a short story by H.P. Lovecraft. Work that shit out.
Yeah, right. I was going to say no.
That one's just really entertaining because it's one of those that has a flashback like 110 years before, but like the descendants are played by the same actors, but they also have the same attitude. Like, they thought Vincent Price was doing devil shit, and so they burned him alive. And then 110 years later, the town's been cursed because Vincent Price, as he died, cursed. And his long-lost ancestor, who looks a lot like him, is there. And the same actors are immediately like, that's that same fucker. We know. And he's going to do that same shit that we're still mad about. And I'm like, you're not the same people. And admittedly, the town is cursed. But I'm like, you've made a huge leap here. And it's really fun because people get possessed and then aren't possessed. And we can tell because they get this really heavy greenish makeup on them, but nobody else can tell. Everybody's like, why did you say that? How strange of you. How out of character. And I'm like, yeah, because they're fucking green. But that one's fun. I recommend that one as well. They're both hilarious for that. Oh. I don't think we watched it this week, but we did watch something. I didn't talk about, and I think it almost is more interesting to talk about. We watched the Netflix film Spiderhead. It's relatively new, has Chris Hemsworth sporting an American accent, Miles Teller, Journey Smollett, good cast.
Yeah, we watched
and also that. Miles Teller. You did watch it. All right. Before we get into this, I want to specify, because I tried to explain this to my sister the other day, and it really derailed things until I made sure she understood. Although this is a movie that has horrific elements in it, there are no spiders in this movie at all. No spiders. So chill the fuck out if you're scared of spiders. No spiders. I'm incredibly curious to see what both you and your wife thought of it.
I don't remember. We watched it several weeks ago.
It has been out for a little bit. To get other people, I just want to give the real basis. It's an island where prisoners apply to be in this program, and they get a much more comfortable situation than prison. And in exchange, they're on this island and they participate in these experiments. And the experiments involved having a thing hooked up to your back that will inject chemicals into you that elicit specific emotional or mental responses. And essentially they're the guinea pigs for these chemicals. And then it turns out things aren't what they seem and hijinks ensue. And
I don't think we liked it that much. I thought personally that there were a lot of interesting things about it, but it seems like it didn't end very, the ending wasn't as interesting or compelling or didn't make as much sense as some of the other things. It seemed like a rushed ending is what I want to say.
It supposedly is based off of a George Saunders short story.
I don't remember us particularly like, I don't think we disliked it. I think we just thought that was fine. We weren't that
Trish did not like it. And Trish did not like it for a lot of reasons that I frequently dislike things. I liked it.
Oh, okay.
And I think there is exactly one reason why we had these disparate reactions.
Okay.
Real, real early on, I went, oh, this is a black comedy. And I found it really entertaining. It is a pitch black comedy, but I thought it was kind of hilarious. And Trish just thought it was a drama. a horror drama or whatever, you know, thriller or whatever. And she did not like it. And I would agree, as a thriller, it sucked. But as a comedy, I thought it was great. It is black comedy, but the whole thing is just so over the top surreal. And I mean, it helps that Chris Hemsworth must be having the time of his life. He is absolutely slobbering all over the scenery. Like, it must have been so fun to play that part. I think I would have had a blast doing it. He gets to do sort of the very perky villain in such a weird, surreal way. The whole movie to me is very sort of surreal. And yeah, I just viewed it as essentially a very, very dark comedy. And I thought it was very entertaining. And Trish viewed it as a horror thriller and thought it sucked. And I think we're both right.
I think it just wasn't our kind of thing. It's not that we don't like dark comedy sometimes, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes it's like,
I often don't.
Yeah.
But I genuinely think if I hadn't been like, oh, it's a comedy, I would not have liked it. Because it's another one of those where it's like lots of shitty people doing lots of shitty things. And I'm like, yeah, but it's kind of almost it's a satire in its way. And then I was like, this works. And also because it really hits that edge where I'm like, it's very realistic while not being very believable at the same time, which yeah. To me is right where that kind of thing fits. Like every time something happened, I was like, come on. I think they were in on the joke. So the rest of you should see it, or if you already have, and if you watch it, try and think of it as a comedy and see if it helps. I can't promise that's what they intended, but that's how I took it. I've had it very entertaining. So yeah, you can check that shit out.
We watched the last season of Westworld.
Oh, is it the last, or you just mean the most recent?
No, I think it's the last one. I think we might watch the whole thing again, because you know they do a lot of things in that show that really require you to remember what happened six shows earlier or two seasons earlier. That's just hard to remember.
But from what I can tell, they also do a lot of things in that show themselves forgetting what happened six episodes or two seasons
maybe earlier. I think they tell interesting stories, though. I think I'm interested to see it again. Another show like that was
Lost.
No. Another show like that we watched again, and it was a somewhat different experience watching again, was Mr. Robot. We watched the whole thing again. And it was...
I intended to watch Mr. Robot, and I never did. And I think I was sort of waiting for it to finish. And then at a certain point, I got enough information sort of filtered through that I was like, it seems really clever and interesting. It also seems like a real downer.
Yeah,
so I just kind of didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm rewatching right now? And I cannot tell you what prompted me to do it.
What's that?
Arrested Development.
You're watching it? Haven't you watched it twice already?
Well, parts of it. I watched it. Well, my history of Arrested Development is complicated. Somewhere around season, I never was interested in it. I would catch up and I'm like, what the hell is this? It's incomprehensible. And then somewhere around season two, I would catch an episode and be like, this is really clever and layered and very like densely packed with jokes in a way that I tend to enjoy. And so then I got into it. And then when fourth season happened, finally, I think we rewatched the first three. And then we watched fourth season. And spoiler alert, fourth season sucks. Because third season should have been the end, and then we'd all be done. And so when fifth season came around, didn't watch it. And I might still not watch beyond third season. But I don't know what it was. I just found myself curious. And it's also the Ur example of a show where no one is sympathetic and yet I still enjoy it, which doesn't happen hardly ever. And I'm watching it now and it holds up and it doesn't hold up. I don't think it's as funny now in a lot of ways. I think the nostalgia is carrying me through a little bit, but it's clever. It's really well written and well thought out and well put together in a way that I just kind of admire. Like, and it's so much more than even I can keep track of. I know there are things where, like, in the very third episode, they put down a thing that four seasons later, they pay off that joke or whatever. And, like, only people who are insane about that kind of stuff notice. But there are also lots of other ones that everybody noticed because I'm like, oh, my God, that's from that thing. And it was really fun this time to go through and find out the first instance of somebody saying, I've made a huge mistake. Which becomes a recurring phrase throughout, and see where that started. So yeah, I'm not loving it, but I am still enjoying it, and it's fun to sort of retread. I don't know that I'll go beyond third season, though. We'll see. Part of me is like, I want to see fifth season. I don't want to do it without doing fourth, but I'm like, fourth was not good. So I don't know, and I don't know what we're gonna watch next. We have an insanely big list of shows. Mm. You going to check out She-Hulk tonight?
Is that tonight?
It starts, well, right now. Theoretically, there's an episode up.
I mean, maybe. Maybe.
Have you watched any of the little Groot shorts?
No.
We watched the first one. It's pretty adorable. I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy.
Oh, you are still?
I finished one of the sort of story arcs, and that kind of got me re-into it on the start of this new one for some reason. So I'm really... Oh, yeah, no, I'm still playing it. I'm definitely going to play it at least to the end of the main story, which admittedly now they're expanding on because it's MMO. You got to have more stuff, but... There is a very specific story that takes place over, depending on how you look at it, I believe either 6 chapters or 12 chapters, because realistically, each chapter has the end of its thing and then another whole storyline that was basically to keep people busy until the next big thing came out. But it is real story. And so I'm in the second half of the third chapter now.
Wow.
And yeah, no, you know it's done because you get end credits in each place. So, and again, I cannot stress enough, it's one of the best stories I've encountered in a video game. Hmm. It's really involved. It's really nuanced. The characters start to mean things to you. They have... I mean, there are things that, like, you're like, that's a weird thing to talk about, and it pays off later. But there's other things that's just character development done really well. And yeah, and the story changes. In fact, the section I just got out of is arguably one of the weaker parts of the storyline, but it's still pretty good. And so I'm really enjoying that. And yeah, the game also is built so that there's never not things to do. I know people who played this game for 10 years and they're still playing it because there's still new crap all the time. The latest one, when this new patch comes out, apparently you're going to get to have your own private island if you want. And I'm like, that sounds cool. I'm nowhere near that point, but all sorts of shit going on. Yeah, so I'm playing a lot of that. I'm kind of stalled on the Stray Cat game.
Hmm.
Which is funny since it's a game that should take less than 10 hours. And I'm like 6 hours in. I don't know. It's starting to feel tedious and more difficult than I want it to be. Not that it's hard, but just more effort than I'm feeling the payoff for. And I do want to finish it, but I don't want to play it to finish it. Like,
seems like that describes a lot of cats. Maybe the game is being successful in giving you the cat experience.
That could be, because there is a lot of that. There are places where you get to scratch your claws on things, places where you can have a little sleeps, knocking shit over. There's a lot involved. In fact, there's a whole deal where, for some reason, two robots like to stand on top of two buildings and toss paint cans back and forth. That's just their game. They play catch that way. And there's a robot dry cleaner, their laundry below, for some reason. And as a cat, I just have to like startle them into dropping a paint can. And then the laundry guy comes out and tries to scrub up his front thing. And then I can get into his building and get something I need and shit like that. There's a lot of little cat things like that. I haven't watched it, but are you familiar with Jackson Galaxy? He's a celebrity cat expert. He got his own show for a while on Animal Planet, so maybe he still does, I don't know. He's like Caesar Milan, but for cats, basically. There's a YouTube video of him watching the video game and like commenting on the cat behavior in it. And I'm kind of curious and also kind of not, so I haven't watched it yet, but I think that's funny. Yeah, so mostly just playing Final Fantasy. Diet and exercise still going good?
Good.
All right, we should probably answer a question because it's getting late already. And we don't have very many questions, so we should savor them.
Savor them.
I shouldn't say question. I should say emails. This is from Mick. Subject line says, "Our opinions passe." Already making me nervous. Hi, Hat. Whatever happened to the phrase, "I think"? I don't mean society's utter lack of using critical thought nowadays, parentheses, which could be a whole other question to discuss, end parentheses, but society's utter lack of acknowledging when a stated idea is simply their opinion. This has gone on for such a long time, it's become the norm. If someone doesn't like a movie, for example, they don't say, "I didn't like this because," they say, "This movie sucks because." Personal opinion has become assumed solid fact. I have heard people who have had bad experience working at Disney, and now they make it their job to post videos demonizing the company at every turn. When did subjectivity override objectivity in discourse? Is there any way people can be brought back to, quote, "just the facts, ma'am," end quote, or at least to an admittance that a statement made is just an opinion? What do you have to say about this?
I don't think I'm quite as... I don't think I observe it to be quite as bad as all that, but there does seem to be, I do seem to get a lot of media, and I try to curate what I get pretty carefully so that I don't get this kind of thing, but it still happens. A lot of statements of opinion asserted like they're facts. And sometimes not just asserted like their facts, but the actual explicit statement that they're a fact or they're science or some nonsense. I don't feel like it's as bad as he's saying, but I mean, maybe I just don't know. But But I think I know what he's talking about. And I do see that happening more than I used to see it happening. But I mean, I think people who do that kind of thing, who unreasonably assert opinions like they're facts, I think those people have always been with us. I think for some reason right now in society, in media, those people are getting their voices are being amplified somehow.
Well, everybody's voice is amplified more than it used to be, thanks to the joy of the internet and.
No, but I mean, like, sometimes community. Something.
No, I think that's a real thing. I don't think there's an increase in people who behave this way. I think there's an increase in people seeing people behave this way.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, what I'm talking about is something posted on Twitter can become a news item. Like that's the news item that this tweet happened, which means, you know, only so many people saw that thing on Twitter. Now millions more are seeing it simply because it's a news item. That's weird to me, but I think you're right. I don't think it's.
And that's what I'm saying though. I don't think that's, oh my God, people didn't used to trust Twitter. No, Twitter didn't used to fucking exist.
Oh, yes.
And I think we're getting the wrong thing. I don't think it's like, oh my God. No, it's because this is it. Populism as a whole has become a much bigger thing.
Mm.
Okay, here's what I really want to say. Mick, and this isn't just this email. This is most of the emails you send. Stop hanging out with whoever you're hanging out with. Stop discoursing with the people you're discoursing with. Stop reading the sites or the information you're reading. The world is not turning into the shit you think it is. You're hanging around in the shitty parts of the world. People aren't always like this. You can find those people real easily, but you don't have to. And yeah, this day and age, with so much information from so many different directions, you kind of have to choose. I mean, truth is very difficult because for any opinion, you will find tons of people vociferously backing it, whatever it is. So finding truth, I think William's insane for trying to carefully like find news things from all sides and so he can get the real picture. I don't think that even exists anymore. You can decide what you interact with. And I say this as somebody who has largely pulled himself out of the same kind of feelings you're having. You can't change the world. You can interact with it differently, which is mostly stop interacting with people or platforms that are doing this shit you're talking about.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like, I know what he's talking about because it's pretty much unavoidable, but it is avoidable at the scale that he's experiencing it, or else he wouldn't be asking this question. Like, again, I know what he's talking about. I experience it too, but clearly I don't experience it to that scale. And I have some, because I do curate what I read and watch and everything else. I think maybe I would have what I think, maybe this is presumptuous of me. I would have what I think is a little more accurate and balanced view of, like you say, just how many people out there are really like this. Don't feed the trolls, I guess, is what it comes down to. Just let them do what they're doing and focus. Tony's right. If you're feeling this way, Mick, it's probably because you need to shut some things off. Just turn some channels off. You don't need that information. You don't need that interaction. You don't need any of that.
Curate. And I'll say it's very hard to figure out which channels. I have largely just turned them all off, and now I'm finally comfortable.
It is, yeah. It is hard, but you can, if you can do it Tony's way, which is fine.
Well, and you can improve. Every time I made changes, it was better. It just wasn't good enough. But I do think there is a point here to what it's saying, though, because I do think because of this tendency where anyone can have a platform about any particular shit they want, and people can get riled up, and honestly, the dopamine cycle of people get a chemical fix of being able to see anger. Basically, the news algorithm, the predictive algorithms aren't trying to find stuff you like. They're trying to find stuff that gets a reaction out of you. And it's way easier to get a reaction of outrage. But I will say, because of all of this, I do think there is a sociolinguistic shift where even if people honestly know that they're talking about their, but they will talk. For example, when I say, just to pull an example out of the air, Last Jedi was a perfectly fine movie, and The Rise of Skywalker is objectively one of the worst things ever put to media, which I think I've said both of those things on this podcast before. Again, hypothetical example out of fucking nowhere. When I say that absolutely Last Jedi wasn't amazing, but it did some cool things that other things hadn't done, and Rise of Skywalker, really everyone involved, including all the actors and everything, should be killed for having participated in that at all. I'm being glib. I'm being funny for a podcast. And I hope no one thinks I don't realize that is my incredibly subjective, incredibly personal opinion, and that I'm not aware of that. And I should say, because actually going through some stuff with therapy and getting some friends involved, I have found out that people thought a lot of things about me that I thought were very clearly jokes. I actually had a friend say, sometimes I worry them because I might hate someone for liking a particular movie. And I'm like, I would, and then I stopped and I'm like, well, I definitely probably said that at some point, but I definitely didn't think anyone thought I actually believed that.
Well,
I do not hate anyone for liking Rise of Skywalker. In fact, I'm happy that somebody gets pleasure out of that steaming piece of trash.
But you hate me for liking that movie you don't like me to mention.
Ghost Rider.
Yeah. You hate me for that.
My sister-in-law is so on the Ghost Rider bandwagon entirely because it pisses me off. But I have been revisiting. I may have to watch that again. Because I think I might not hate it now.
Because you watched that movie with...
yeah. No. Because
Nicolas Cage in it?
I mean, I still don't think it's a good movie, but I think it might be entertainingly not good. And just a lot of things. Well, I mean, the really classic one was when the first Underworld movie came out. I hated it, like angrily hated it.
Oh.
And years later, Trish made me watch it again. And I'm like, oh, no, it's fine. I mean, it's not great, but it's fine. But I had a lot of preconceived notions going in. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably the same thing with Ghost Rider. Because when I see clips from it, things now, I'm like, how could I have hated this? it's bad, but it's real fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's just dumb. Like, I clearly had some stuff I was taking in. And that's a huge thing when we recently saw the Thompson Hires a Prostitute movie, Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. I liked it. Trish didn't. That is at least in part because very specific things in that movie resonated with Trish in a very specific negative way.
Mm.
And I will admit there is a part of me who will see stuff and be like, that's bad or that's good. And I think I've got a pretty good beat on it. As I get older, I am witnessing a lot more things that I'm like, I didn't like that. And I really think that's about me. Like, not just to the degree that, in my opinion, something was bad, but to things where I'm like, I don't even think that's bad, but I didn't like it. And I'm trying to see more of that. We can always afford to be more open-minded and more aware of our own subjectivity. This is the thing. I've never really like been angry at someone for liking Ghost Rider. Like, that's And apparently sometimes people thought I was, and that's a sad thing. I don't like
I think something else
and
is contributing.
Honestly, Mick, you may be running into the same thing where people think that they're clearly joking or being glib or whatever. But the words they use make you think that they think it's a fact.
Well, I mean, you're often stopping me on the podcast to say, now, William, what you're saying sounds like this to people other than me. And I have to go, oh, well, okay. That's not really what I intended at all, because I'm talking to you and you know what I mean. And I forget. Well,
and yours is about, I think seldom are you being entirely glib necessarily. Yours is about how you phrase things. And I'm reading pejorative aspects of it that you wouldn't necessarily be aware of. Mine are like, no, I said what I said. Just obviously it was a joke, because what kind of deranged lunatic would actually mean it sincerely?
Well,
I don't want any of the people in Rise of Skywalker to be killed. I don't want anyone to be punished for that film.
Okay. But the thing is, it's become fashionable, which is another thing I think people, Mick and lots of other people, I've had to remind myself of this. It's become fashionable to say really hateful, outrageous things. And people aren't exactly joking like you are, but they're also clearly not serious. I mean, I think we need to understand that a lot of these people on Twitter, and even a lot of these people on the news, I mean, they're in contexts that 20 years ago we would have taken seriously, but just listen to them long enough and watch them long enough, and you can tell they're just spouting off. They're, you know, they're not really thinking about what they're saying. They don't really have strong beliefs about the thing they're talking about. You're just starting to realize that a lot of what's happening, a lot of the horrible polarization and hate and mean stuff, nobody is really that committed or invested in it. And it's just a show. And you don't really have to take it that seriously.
And what my theory, this is not a fact, but my theory on it is that by and large, these same things that we're seeing now have always been said, but before they were said at the dinner table,
or Thanksgiving,
or in the local bar, or at the family reunion and
that's
shit
right.
like that. And
yeah,
now
right.
your kind of fucked up dad has a YouTube channel and people find him entertaining or sympathetic enough that they, and that's the whole nature of populism. The whole thing that made that asshole get elected president is nothing brings people together like hating the same shit or loving the same shit. And it's incredibly boring to be on the internet and be like, that's boring as shit. I express a lot of opinions on here stronger because it's not entertaining for me to be like, no, it's more fun to be like, that was awesome, or oh, that sucked.
You see a lot of opinions being expressed that are simply the opposite of what their opposition expressed. It'll completely contradict something they said 2 weeks ago or something they're going to say 2 weeks from now. So,
because we're bonding over hating the opponent. Not necessarily bonding over agreeing to a thing.
But that also means that none of this is being taken seriously.
It's exponentially bigger when we're talking about the entertainment industry. Or personal philosophies or whatever, when there's nothing on the line like presidential races, then we're who cares? I can say whatever I want.
Yeah.
Why do you care if I say this is an objectively bad or good thing?
And that's where we run in
just a movie or whatever.
That's where we run into issues, because like you said, certain people get elected or certain policies get advocated for, certain laws get passed. And so then people start asking, okay, so we need to take it seriously here, but like with the election that we're talking about, but we don't want to talk too much about, a lot of stuff led up to that, right? So now people are concerned. They're concerned with all the other things that probably actually aren't that important and probably actually shouldn't be taken so seriously, because they look like things that ultimate event was gradually built upon. And so people are starting to think, okay, I realize that this event by itself in isolation is very trivial and shouldn't be taken seriously, but because it sort of built a platform for this to happen, I'm not as comfortable with this anymore. I want to call this out. I want to criticize this now. Even though part of me knows how stupid and insignificant it is, and that's probably the best thing to do is for me to ignore it, but other people aren't ignoring it, so this happens. And so people feel ambivalent. They want to believe that they don't have to take everything seriously, and they also want to believe in free speech and all that stuff, but they don't know which innocuous, stupid things that they ignore are going to contribute eventually to this thing that they don't want to happen.
Well, and there's all sorts of tie-ins there. I hope I've sent you a couple of them. There was a really good cracked one about social media, and Ryan George did a really good one about the internet algorithm. And the algorithm finds something for you that is like, this person did a terrible thing. This one person also has a belief that you don't agree with, that may be completely unrelated to the terrible thing.
Right.
And so you're like, oh, see, I knew nobody who felt the way I felt would ever do that. And then you start equating the two, and the algorithm starts equating the two. And then you're like, well, this second thing also comes with some other stuff, which I don't necessarily disagree with, except I know I disagree with this second thing now because of the first thing. Therefore, I must disagree with the third and the fourth thing.
That's right.
And the cracked one was really impressive because they were like, I want to engage in rational, important discourse. And so they do. They put out tweets. They put out Facebook posts, whatever. Nobody gives a shit.
Nope.
But they made an offhand comment about somebody saying something really stupid about an insect, like which way the paper towel roll goes or whatever.
Right.
And they said a thing about that because they do have an opinion, even though it's not important. And it got so much engagement that they're like, oh shit, nobody pays attention to me with the real stuff. And I want people to pay attention to me. I want people to like me. I want people to retweet me. I want people to agree with me. I guess I'm talking about the toilet.
Well, and some people make a living at this. So it's also how much money they make. I mean, there are, you mentioned
at that
earlier
point, whether or not people like your opinions on anything is literally your life.
Right. Well, you were talking earlier about how
lose money because people disagree with me on the toilet paper thing.
How I try to get, you know, I try to get information from various sides so that I can check my own biases and things like that. There are people from both sides who I've had to stop getting stuff from because I noticed there was always a process. So first, they were really good and intelligent, and they actually got a lot of attention, a lot of subscribers and stuff, but they weren't superstars, right?
Yeah.
So that's how it started. Then they started, a lot of their content started to be taken over, casting aspersions at the superstars. It's like, well, why does that guy have a million, you know, and I don't? This doesn't make any sense. But then they started doing what that person was doing, which was someone who I didn't like because they were a superstar because they were terrible. I mean, you know what I mean? They were they were saying stupid things. They were getting all this attention because they were acting in a ridiculous way. And so this person, finally to get those views, finally to get those subscribers, finally to get that fame, sold out basically, started doing that stuff. And yep, sure enough, they got all that attention, but they also weren't giving me the information that I had previously, enjoyed and liked. So I've had to drop people left and right because of this process of, you know, again, they start and people like me really like them and they get, you know, thousands of people subscribing, but that's not enough. And so they have to cross that divide into this area where they're not being truthful, where they're exaggerating, where they're, you know, they're not being intellectually honest anymore.
And this happens on a very individual level, even if you're not a business, even if you're not earning money off of it. I mean, I get it. I remember when I joined Twitter and I would have things where I'm like, I thought that was really good. And like, nobody paid attention. And then I said this dumbass thing and everybody went for it. I think the most attention I ever got on Twitter was when I made a comment about something being a joke about something being synonymous with masturbation. And people came out of the woodwork, like people with huge followings and like all sorts of stuff, to retweet it or to like it. I mean, still a drop in the bucket compared to like fame, but still like far and away more attention than I ever got for anything else. And I'm like, that's a little sad. But at my gym, there are, I'm on a treadmill and there's like 8 TVs playing. And most of them are playing news from various sites. And I fucking hate it. The sound's not on, the captions aren't on, but I can't just stare at the treadmill because then I'm staring at the timer kicking down and that's terrible. And I'm listening to things in that house, but my eyes got to go somewhere. And I see so much shit I just don't want to see. One of them is usually on HGTV and it's stupid home renovation shows or whatever. And I try and focus on that really hard. I'm like, I don't want to see the other ones at all. And I think we've all done this. We all continue to do this. I mean, no offense, Mick. I've known you to do this thing you're talking about many, many times in our relationship. But it's a thing when it's on a personal level, when it's alone in a room where it's in private conversations. Now all of that stuff just gets ripped so big. And we all have to watch ourselves and remember. And I try and do more and more when people say shit that I think is insane. I try and do more of like, where are they coming from? There's a whole bunch of, not to get into names, but like, I'm definitely on one side of the political spectrum. And there are people in power and people who make their money off of it, who I think deliberately are nasty and hateful because it is effective to their ends. The vast majority of people who are very far on the other side of the political spectrum from me, aren't doing that. They genuinely are doing and saying what they think are the good things and the right things and the things that are best for people overall. And they want people to have what they think of as a good and happy life and a good and happy society. Now, my version of what a good and happy society is could not look more different than theirs. But it doesn't mean they are any less sincere in their position. But when we're just talking about opinions on bullshit or like, seriously, you don't have to listen to people. You don't have to read their shit. You don't have to hang out in those places. I just recently floated an idea out there that I'm still considering because I've curated my Twitter feed very carefully. Because I used to have stuff and there were people who would get too political and it would be the same thing like the news. It would just make me full of rage and unhappy or whatever. And so I really got it down to like people who talk about shit that isn't very bad or whatever. But I still have like good friends and stuff who will be like, this is important. You need to know this. And I'm like, important is a weird word, but okay. And I know it and then I'm sad or whatever. And I've recently thought, what if just literally anytime anyone causes a tweet to be in my feed, it doesn't have to be that they tweeted, maybe they liked it and like somebody else put it into it, that makes me unhappy to see, I just unfollow them just immediately, just after one. I'm like, would that make a happy Twitter feed? And the answer is no, I should just be off Twitter, as we should all be off all of that shit. It's evil. But
I feel like I need to point out here though, the internet has always been like this.
Yeah,
always. The difference now is more people are using it, a wider age span, wider cultural span, and they're using it all the time. That's another thing.
And it's become a much bigger part of both society and the economy,
right?
Which is a huge driving factor on everything.
It drives a lot of things like the media and the economy and politics, and it's with people all the time. I pointed out how important that is. So, I mean, maybe that helps me to know that, like, you know, being on the internet since 1987 or whatever, and seeing all the same things happening, it tends to prevent me from having a big moral panic about it. It is happening on a much larger scale, that's for sure. And it is impacting things in ways that I don't like. I don't like how it impacts media or like news media or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think we can use that term moral panic, because I think there's a lot of moral panics right now. Yeah. I think people need to stop and go, hey, what was your attitude when Tipper Gore was trying to say that video games was causing everybody to turn into murderers?
Right. Remember? And music.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember that? Remember the satanic panic around D&D? Remember those things and see how they apply to a lot of the moral panics today. It's like, it's not like that. Don't be Tipper Gore.
Don't be Tipper Gore then.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Tipper Gore would be like that now.
Possibly not. But don't do that. Just try not to do that about things and people.
Hillary Clinton had her phase of being opposed to violent video games when she was a senator too. And I think a lot of us would look back and be like, and there is a great podcast called You're Wrong About that was originally just about people misunderstanding like famous things in history and stuff like that, but gradually has sort of shifted to famous instances of moral panic and all the information you don't have. And of course the version we have nowadays is people read the headline and not the article. And the headlines know that, so they make the headlines as clickbaity as possible.
Yep.
And they don't go on. So I guess the answer is, Mick, there is nothing to be done about it on a broader scale, but it's also not as ubiquitous as you think it is, and you have tremendous control over what stimulus you get. So, no, you can't change the world by yourself, but you can change how you interact with the world. That's the only thing you got control of, is how you interact with the world. And that's not the world's fault, because that's true for everyone.
Yep.
That's like
for everybody, for all time.
It's very much the same thing of, you are special and valued and unique, just like everybody else. I suppose you can change the world in the ways we just described, which we all agreed are pretty awful. And by we all, I mean you and me. Wait a minute. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I've been dealing with a bunch of stuff in therapy, but a kind of plus one I've been dealing with lately is another side effect of being by myself a lot. I have so much control over my life. Like my day-to-day schedule and things, because I'm really honing in to like, I can make most of my days really pleasant because I have the power to determine how much fun I'm going to have versus productivity and at what cycle. I don't do well long term with a lot of stress. I also don't do well long term with a lack of structure and responsibility. And I always did this. I'm like, oh, I've got these things I got to do. Okay, I'm going to do them as fast as I can. And then I get to take the rest of the time to just fuck around. And the truth is, both of those things turned out to be bad. And so nowadays, I'm much more about like, I'm going to get some stuff done. I'm going to fuck around a little bit. I'm going to get some stuff done on a daily basis. And again, I'm going to control what inputs I get. I watch a lot of YouTube. I am very careful. There are some times where some YouTube video looks interesting, but I'm like, I do not want YouTube to start thinking this is the kind of thing I want. So I will skip it. Or before I watch something, I'll be like, why are you watching this? Are you watching this because you want to be outraged? Or here's a question for you. We really got to end this soon. It's getting long. But do you remember, this is probably not a thing for you, this feels like one of those Williams in a different headspace, do you remember in general, because I don't remember the specifics, the first time you watched a pitch meeting video about a movie you really liked?
Not specifically, no.
No, me neither specifically, but I do remember, because it was a gradual thing too, feeling very jarring. These are videos specifically designed to make fun of films. And when I enjoy them most are when they're movies that I'm like, yeah, that shit was dumb. And it's real fun, especially when they make a joke that I'm like, I also noticed that, and things like that. Or like, I didn't even notice that. It's worse than I thought. But then I'd watch one that I'm like, I actually thought this was really good. And it's just wall to wall making fun of it. And I'm like, for a while that was tough. I'm like, no, it was good. And I'm like, no, it can be two things. And in fact, all things are many things. And equally bad to just hating on shit for the sake of hating on it is loving shit for the sake of loving it. Maybe I am sure there are reasons to not regret the fact that Elon Musk exists. I'm sure there are. But if you like things about him, that doesn't mean ignoring the bad things.
Or vice versa.
If you can like a movie. I like a lot of movies that have a lot of shit wrong with them.
Me too.
And I acknowledge that.
Yep. You gotta own it.
And sometimes I watch something that I used to like and I'm like, oh, I can't ignore this so much. Like, it's outweighing it. I can't cope with this anymore. And sometimes I avoid watching things because I think that'll happen. But there's lots of things that I'm like, oh, this is, I mean, I talked about The Goonies. The Goonies holds up really well, except for the blatant, ridiculous levels of racism, the absolutely horrific ableism in it, and the terrible fat shaming. And those things are bad. And I do not enjoy those in there. And I acknowledge, and if you were going to make a movie today, I would say, do not put those in. And they are not okay in The Goonies. They're not okay just because it's The Goonies. Those things suck. And I'm aware of this, and I know that. And that's the thing. I know it. I'm not giving those things a pass. But then the other parts I really like. There's a lot to like about it. And you can do both. But you should do both in either direction. Those things in The Goonies doesn't therefore mean the good parts are shitty. No. And the good parts don't mean that those shitty things aren't there.
But what you're talking about is not just how you should approach a movie. It's how you should approach life.
Absolutely.
You can't look at life in black and white terms. But we've got that dualistic nature.
We always want to do that. It's right or wrong.
Well, in our culture, we do. Yeah.
Yes.
Dualism is huge in our culture, and it's
well, and
incredibly damaging.
And in the global culture at this point, as well, not just our culture and Western culture, but in the global culture, I've been trying to look, experiencing some East Asian films and a little anime and stuff. There are a lot of philosophical ideas in there that I'm like, that's some bullshit. And lately I've been like, or think about what social, like think about the history and culture of that group of people and what that, and how their life is different and all of that. And it's the same thing now. There's so much wrong with our country and our government and everything. It doesn't mean Americans suck. It doesn't even mean American government sucks. And there are other countries. Guess what? Scandinavian countries are not perfect. I like a lot of shit about their government that we don't have, but they've still got problems. And you don't have to pick sides, sort of ever. You don't ever have to pick sides. And
which doesn't mean you don't have preferences about this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah.
You just don't have to blindly go in with 100% on everything. You can pick and choose. You can say, well, I agree with this, but I disagree with that. Oh, and I agree with this, but I disagree with that. You don't have to, again, it's not black and white. You don't have to go all in on this thing and blindly believe or root for it.
But those make whatever. The most boring headlines.
I know, and it makes boring people like myself. But
there's no, you're boring for other reasons that are much less wholesome and wise.
I see.
who would read movie reviews if the headline was, you know, Spider-Man Far From Home has some good and has some bad?
Just not my thing.
And yeah, Maleficent. I had some very personal feelings about it, but yours might be different. Like, who's reading that?
Nobody.
I mean, admittedly, I would decide to be like, that's incredibly unusual. I want to check that shit out. But that's for the novelty.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. You are correct. But
and
again,
when people talk about, do you like something or do you like it ironically? There are times where I can't tell the difference.
Right. Well, and what you're saying, that's also been true about media forever. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. I mean, that's just how it's always been. It's really not that different.
Case in point. That's not a saying anyone has ever used in history. William just made it up. And yet he says it as though it were a common journalistic term. Great example. Great example, William. Thank you. I feel like you really, you put a button on it there. A lot of old classic movies people love. And I'll find out. Well, there's a good one, actually. Chinatown. You ever see the movie Chinatown?
I haven't seen it. No.
I haven't either. And I used to be like, I really need to see that. And then I learned enough about it that I'm like, I'm never going to see that. For very specific reasons related to me. Yeah. And related to both the filmmaker and the subject matter within the film and some other things. And I'm a little bit disappointed because I think it probably is a really great film. For a lot of reasons, but I know of reasons why I would fucking hate it. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. You don't have to expose yourself to things you don't want to see.
But really, just get away. Stop discoursing with the entities you're discoursing with. Or the discourse that you're witnessing.
No, you need to think of
you
the
can
media
only control you yourself. Make your life as good as you can make it.
We've talked about this before. It's good sometimes to think of the media you consume as a diet, as food. You know, what would you, you know, what's healthy for you to eat? What's edifying and good? What's junk? What's fun because it's junk, but what's terrible because it's junk? You know, work all that out and, you know, let
and
yourself
sometimes
be choosy.
It's really hard. I got into a real big debate with a friend because they do and they're like, well, I don't doom scroll very, I mean sometimes I do that but not really, but I want to be informed, and they'll talk about the things and I'm like, I don't need to know any of that, which is not to say that it's not serious, but it doesn't change anything about how I would act.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's not changing, like if it's a government thing, it's not going to change how I'm voting, it's not going to change how I'm donating my money, it's not making me go to a protest that I wouldn't have gone to if I hadn't known this.
Right.
Trish keeps up on the news more and has this thing of like trying to figure out what things she should tell me. Cause I'm like, I want to know the important things.
Yeah.
And sometimes she'll be there and I'm like, that wasn't it. And there was a really great one I had to tell her eventually, which is I never want to know. And this is a tough one for people to get. I never, ever want anybody to tell me about a bill that was introduced. Ever. Because in between that point and the hypothetical point where it might become a law, I'm not gonna do anything. I guess that's a little glib. If something really horrific was introduced and it got to the point where we're like, oh shit, this might happen, then maybe I want to know so I can call my congressman or whatever. But in general, there was one a while back where somebody introduced just a shitty, shitty law and they're like, can you believe they did that? I'm like, don't care if I can believe it. Like, why did you need to tell me about that? I'm confident it's not going to go anywhere. Also, I can't control it if it does. All that does is just make me feel a little worse about the world.
Well, the problem is there is a practice of introducing bills that you know won't get anywhere, but you think it excites your base or gets your base all riled up.
Or
that is a problem.
There was the thing where some state ratified the ERA and my friend was like, we're going to get it now. It's going to happen because this. And at that point, I had no idea what might happen. But I was like, I think there's still a real good chance it's not going to happen. And it turned out for reasons, and I'm not going to discuss the truth, but there were reasons why. And they were like, oh, come on. It's like, I'm like, nope. Let me know when it does, and I will throw a party. But in the meantime, I neither want to hear that this is going to ruin the world. I was so annoyed. And this sounds weird. Don't get me wrong. Roe v. Wade being overturned is an absolute huge injustice and a terrible thing. And we need to do all we can to fix it. However, the surprisingly lengthy period where everybody wanted to talk about how it looks like it's probably going to be overturned, I hated every minute of that. There was no use in that. There was no use. And especially that one, because it's the Supreme Court. I'm like, am I going to call up my local Supreme Court justice and complain? Am I their constituent? No. All we can do is sit and ruminate until it happens. And I was also like, and maybe it won't. And it turned out it did, which is awful. And again, I cannot overstate how terrible I find that decision. But spending time in the weeks leading up that we think this is going to happen, anytime people want to talk about it, I'm like, I don't want, why would you talk about this? What is there to talk about except, wow, aren't we all sad and angry and scared? Yep. What are we going to do about it? Jack shit.
That poor guy.
There's so much of that. I don't read reviews of movies that I haven't seen if I know for a fact I'm going to see them, or I know for a fact I'm not going to see them. Because why? If I've already decided, why do I need to know? And also, if I have a friend who has very different tastes in movies from me, I don't put a lot of stake in what they tell me about the thought of a movie. Because I'm like, well, we like movies. Now, I will read movie reviews sometimes because I want to know why. And sometimes I read ones and I'm like, oh, I can see why that would annoy you. I don't give a shit about that part. And you said that this part was good. And I do really care about that part. So I think it'll be good. And that's the thing. And there are certain reviewers out there that I really enjoy their reviews because they aren't, this movie was good, this movie was bad. They're like, here's the things in this movie I thought were good. Here's the things in this movie I thought were bad. And I can be like, oh, I care about those things. I don't care about those things. Whatever. And I like that much better. But again, doesn't make a good headline. Who reviews a movie that the headline is, there were good and bad things in this? All right. Sorry. At this point, I've just lost in around. But this is a thing that more than this whole area is a powder keg for me. It all frustrates me. And I mean, I'm feeling my asshole today. That is not how I meant that. I'm in prime jerk mode. That also wouldn't have been as bad if I hadn't led with the other one. I'm feeling ornery. There we go. Ornery's fine. So I'm just going to point out, Mick, your email was essentially doing what you're talking about. You're like, why is it like this now in the world? It's not. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not. It's your opinion. And that's a semantic argument. Absolutely. Because it's not about the question. It's a valid question. How you phrased it, though, looked like that. Well, it's everywhere. You can only control you, and you have a great deal of control over what you do and see. And why do you think William is so out of touch with society? He works at that. He works hard to have no clue, and I applaud him for it. I mean, not to his face generally, but you can't control them. You can control you, and they're not forcing you to listen to them. Hopefully, if they are, let us know and we will bust you out.
Can I say something positive about the way things are now? A lot of people are getting, a lot of people are being heard that didn't used to be.
Yeah.
It's hard to feel bad about that.
I mean,
it's, that feels pretty good. And if all the rest of it is the price we pay, it doesn't really seem like that hefty a price as long as we do what you're saying. And that just don't get so uptight about what those people are doing. Like you said, you control yourself, appreciate that some people have a voice that didn't used to. I mean, that helps me a lot to look at that and go, this is great because of this. Now, some people have a voice who I didn't want to hear, but one wasn't going to happen without the other. So I'll take it. I love hearing these voices and I love the opportunity to hear these voices. And guess what? I can shut those other voices out. I have that power. I don't have to watch that video. Yeah. I don't have to watch that channel. I don't have to listen to those people, but I can listen to these people now because now they have a voice. I think that's great. I think that's wonderful.
But you have to be careful what you listen to. The one of the very hard ones for me, and one I struggle with constantly. It's like alcoholism. Like, you're never cured, but that I work really hard on is I try and avoid news about people I don't like fucking up. Like, from what I could gather, there is a lot of hilarious stuff involving how Alex Jones and his lawyer handled the trial of about Sandy Hook. And I mean, it couldn't happen to a better guy. Don't get me wrong. I wish terrible things for that man. And the least of it is owing tons of money to those victims for the shit he did. But that feeds into it. Like, the Schadenfreude stuff feeds into it, because if you start enjoying that, first of all, chemically there's a lot of things going on, but then it's very easy when you relish that, then you get mad when things are going well for them, and then it and they go back and forth and it
doesn't end.
Maybe I can't even explain it. I can say is the more I have cut that out, the happier I am.
Yeah,
which it sucks, because sometimes it's really funny to watch an asshole get their comeuppance. And sometimes I fall. Sometimes I'm like, oh, shit, I got to see this one. But in general, the less I do that, the happier I am.
And does Ezzy have something to say?
Agree. Yes. Now she's going to bite me if I keep doing that. All right. That, huh? We are so fucking overtime. You riled me up here, Mick, which I suppose is a sign of a good email, honestly.
Yeah, but probably is.
I don't know that Mick's gonna like anything I had to say. Actually, let's have that. I know for a fact Mick hates everything I don't do this. It's weird to say I know for a fact somebody else is gonna have an opinion. Like, then am I doing it or am I not doing it? I don't know. I am of the opinion that Mick factually knows everything I said is off. That doesn't work either. Anyway, everybody's opinions are just opinions except mine. And mine are more fever dreams. Or just lies. I lie a lot. Come back, listen to us next week. In the meantime, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. You talk about this. We've heard plenty from me and more than enough from William. So you talk about it. Let us know. Mick, I would very much be interested in having you getting on there and seeing how you responded to this, because I feel like I was harsh at times, but again, very glib. And also, do all our shit, go get Odd Wings at Smashwords, smashwords.com, book ODDWINGS, buy it, it's $3, fucker. Go to aethertheater.com, it's spelled in a very unhelpful way, and see all of William's stuff. William is much more prolific than me. Nope. I thought I had a good insult for why you were more prolific, but I don't. He's just more committed. And listen again next week. And remember, as he is always with you, even if you don't see her, in your heart, and also because she's right here, just off screen. See? She's always here.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.